And now it's my distinct pleasure to present the Philip F. Anschutz Trophy to the captain of the Columbus crew, Guillermo Barros Escaloto.
Of the 2008 MLS Super Draft, the Los Angeles football craft select from the University of Akron.
This happened in Argentina, maybe people died. Someone could die, you know?
If they took Nuevo Chicago and they were moving it to Rosario. Yeah.
Still a chance for a fourth goal here. Affle drives forward. Affle scores! What a goal! It is amazing! King Harrison grabs the crown in second half stoppage time!
And 3, 2, 1.
Wait, I'm confused because I thought you only counted down with your fingers. You didn't audibly do it. I don't even know if this is... Oh, hey, buddies. This is the Massive Report podcast brought to you by Old North Arcade at 2591 North High Street. It's a 21 and up arcade with dozens of classic arcade games, foosball, air hockey, and a dope porch. www.oldnortharcade.com. Hit it up. We are back to the normal lineup. You got the whole gang back together, at least the typical one, myself, Bart Logan included. We've also got Patrick Murphy with us. Smurf, how you doing, sir?
I'm dandy. The weather's nice. The crew didn't lose, I guess. Things are good.
That is a very positive outlook to take. We've also got joining us after a absence last week and absence, I think, the last time I'd been on the podcast before that, Ralph Trudell. Ralph, good to have you back.
Hey, yeah, it's nice to be back. Unfortunately, Mother Nature's trying to kill me as my allergies are probably through the roof. So it's not good times in this dojo.
Well, I'm in a dojo?
Yeah, Cobra Kai, man. I don't know. I'm just having some fun today.
How are you on Cobra Kai? Because those are the bad guys. That's like the Anthony Precourt of dojos.
Cobra Kai was the first one I could think of.
Ralph is the bad guy. We just heard
it from here. Ralph Trudell, the official bad guy of the podcast.
Just ask the people in Austin, Texas. I'm the bad guy today. So.
And then, of course, we have Alex Stanek. Alex, how you doing, sir?
Not too bad. Paying very close attention to these Fernando Torres Chicago rumors, because if he doesn't go to Chicago, I'm sure that Anthony Precourt will open up his wallet and sign a big name DP. Who am I kidding? Yeah, he's going to go somewhere else. I'm fine.
Just think of, you know, with his collective history and bashing Schweinsteiger's, what sort of noise that Chicago can make in the World Cup this summer if they were to add Fernando Torres. Thank God everyone's mic was on mute for that.
That's a very good point. Yeah, I'm sure that the Bridgeview journalists will be paying close attention to this one because they're probably going on YouTube and watching footage of Fernando Torres from like 2008, and they think he's a superstar. When I saw him play for AC Milan for half a season, he sucks, guys. He's really bad. But so is Major League Soccer, so he'll probably do okay.
That's a fair assessment. Certainly could be kind of said at least a little bit this weekend. If it sounds like we're kind of, you know, pulling for any sort of material to go off right now, it's because we had nothing to go off of on Saturday, albeit a point that the crew will take, a scoreless draw, but not certainly the sexiest or most memorable of games, most newsworthy event happening in the first 15 minutes. So we will break down that draw. We'll also look at previewing. We've got two games coming up here this week, Wednesday and Saturday. So this is the middle of three game in an eight day span for the crew. We'll look at some of the lineup decisions from that game Saturday and project what Greg Berhalter might be looking at for the two games later this week, and then celebrate a rather infamous anniversary of the Kaikamara-Pipa-Higuain PK incident that led to Kai's eventual departure. As always, we'll take your questions from the masses, get updates on the status of efforts to save our beloved crew, and get some pregame predictions in. But first, Saturday in Seattle at Safeco Field, I think. We have a game, Pat Murphy, that, again, the most decisive, you know, moment probably came 15 or so minutes in with the red card decision for Pedro. But why don't you walk us through the game on the whole?
CenturyLink Field. Mm. That's the there close, though. Yeah, as you mentioned, it was not the most exciting game for those who like goals. If you were in need of that, I hope you tuned in to other Major League Soccer games because there were plenty of those, or Real Barca in El Clasico yesterday because there were goals there. But that doesn't mean this wasn't a game worth talking about. Despite not scoring, Columbus, going down a man 15 minutes in, as you said, still created some pretty good chances. The most notable, I think, would be Giassi Zardes's breakaway about halfway through the first half. Maybe a little bit before that, when he gets in on goal, I think it was Milton Valenzuela played the ball through to him as they kind of broke forward, and it looked like Giassi got a little bit of a tug on his arm. I don't think it was enough, looking at it a couple times, to warrant a penalty kick, but just kind of a savvy play by the defender to just throw him off balance a little bit. With that said, that's a goal from inside, or a shot from inside the box that you want a player like Giassi scoring, you know,
or at least putting on target.
Yeah, right. I mean, work. He did pick a corner. He just picked the outside of the post for the corner. So there was a good chance that went for nothing. And then a little bit later, just before halftime, Giassi involved again. This time it was Ricardo Clark, I believe, that played a cross in to the box. He found Zardes, who chested down, pretty good control. Mm-hmm. And then he kind of flicks it over his shoulder to Milton Valenzuela running into the penalty box. And it took a pretty high bounce off the turf. And Milton's not able to put it on frame, puts it over. You know, for a 19-year-old whose job is typically to defend more so than shoot, I don't know how much fault you can put it on him. But
especially
you do
with
like
the turf.
Right. And you do. And, you know, I think this is the first time he's probably played on, maybe the second time he's played on turf. But, yeah, I mean, I think you'd like the fact that he's getting forward, getting in those positions, that they're able to, you know, move the ball from one side of the field to the other on that play. And then the second half, while Columbus did break out a little bit, it was mostly defending. You know, there were a couple chances. Zach Steffen saves, I think, the one official shot on goal from Clint Dempsey. That you know, these last few games we've seen that one shot on goal go in, so good for the crew to not let that in. But Alex Crenali came in, I forgot to mention, in the first half, the return of him after he'd been on loan with Orange County of the USL. He comes in, they go to three or five in the back, however you want to look at it, and I thought did a pretty good job of locking Seattle down. The Sounders haven't been the most prolific attack in the league this year, but you know, when you go down a man, you know you're going to be under pressure. I thought that it's a pretty solid defensive game all in all, and I mean that from the whole team. You know, Pipa Higuain was back defending throughout the game. Josh Williams put out a tweet after the game saying he might have been the team's best defender, along with congratulating the guys on the effort. Yeah, I think, you know, we're seeing this team continue to be better and better defensively, you know, as the weeks go on. A third shutout, all three coming on the road now. But, you know, the question is I think, more geared towards the offense and, you know, why this team is not struggling, but just not scoring at the level that we're used to.
And yeah, you see that. And I think there are a lot of people that will say, you know, anytime that you go into Seattle and come away with a point, that's a victory. I think there are, you know, a lot of other folks, especially that say, given those circumstances, given, you know, what you've got here with the three games in 8 days and playing down a man for 75 plus minutes, that's a really solid result. I think the devil's advocate is to say that, you know, you had chances with are, you know, your top scorer, Giassi Zardes, grade A opportunities there to put this team in front, and a game that you should probably have taken 3 points of, or at least found the back of the net in, against a team in Seattle that has struggled a great deal this year, is without Jordan Morris. They're relying on, like, Will Bruin up top. The truth is probably somewhere in between, but what should people really read into this result? What does this say about this team?
I think, you know, the team got – I put this out earlier in the week that, you know, despite the offensive struggles of Seattle being near in the bottom of the basement of Major League Soccer and in the Western Conference for sure, their defense was actually pretty darn good. You know, between Roman Torres, Chad Marshall, I think they were tied for third least in Major League Soccer in goals conceded. So the fact that, you know,
but
you don't,
they only played six games. Well,
it's still impressive though, nonetheless. I mean, that's, what are we on, week 9 now? Something like that? No, 10. Okay. So, you know, it's defensive, it's great, and obviously the Western Conference can't hold a candle to what the Eastern Conference does in terms of Major League Soccer, but, you know, it's still, to go against Seattle and, you know, score, consider yourself a little bit lucky. But the offense too, like you said, Bart, and you alluded to it, is Will Bruin's not going to get it done as a top scorer for Seattle. Clint Dempsey's not the Clint Dempsey of old, the Fulham, Tottenham, you know, U.S. men's national team Clint Dempsey. His role's changing, and it's always evolving. So now he's either going to go up top, he's going to go wide, he's going to drop into the number 10 and try to serve it as a distributor. So he's not going to score necessarily. Ladero, I don't believe, was on the field.
No, he was a late scratch.
Yeah, Ladero wasn't on the field necessarily on Saturday. You had the Roldan brothers. Ozzy Alonso's more of a defensive substitution. So I don't know necessarily what to take from this game necessarily, but the thing is, like you guys said, and we all know it, it's Major League Soccer. If you could get a point on the road, that's going to go pretty far later on down in the season when it comes down to whether you're going to be making those knockout round games or you're going to be hosting a game at home.
It certainly was interesting, and I think what we saw, and I think this speaks a lot about, for Greg Berhalter, first of all, we saw a rotation with this team. Artur out, not even in the 18. Ricardo Clark filling in for him. You had Christian Martinez and Pedro Santos on the wings. Obviously, Santos out of the picture early on, and Martinez subbed off in favor of Crenali, as you mentioned, Patrick. So that gave you the kind of back three with Crenali, Williams, and Abubakar. But then you saw really Hector Jimenez and Milton Valenzuela being asked to more or less cover the entire length of the touch lines for this team. And, you know, you mentioned the opportunity that Valenzuela had. You know, yes, you'd probably like him to put it away, but I think I've personally got more leeway for him missing that than Giassi Zardes not putting it on net or on target with that breakaway earlier. And Hector Jimenez, who filled in for Harrison Offal, who put in a solid performance, I'd say, all around. What do we think about this this lineup that they kind of had to put together pretty impromptu, pretty early on? I think Greg Berhalter obviously had his plans for a rotation for these games coming up, and to see a wrench thrown in that early on with the red card to Pedro, when you look at it in that view too, and in that context, I think it does make that result a little bit easier to swallow.
Yeah, and I think that the team in general played really well. Other than Pedro making an incredibly stupid decision, I don't know what he was thinking with that, you know, high boot. But I think I know what he was thinking. He was trying to hurt the other player and get away with it. But other than that, I thought the whole team played really well. They played as a unit, and especially in Berhalter's system, that's so important. And to see kind of depth guys stepping in and still doing that is really, really great to see. Especially on the defensive end, I think it's important that we had so much kind of continuity from last season with the defenders. You know, you have Lawless and, well, guys like him, Crenali, who are kind of able to step in, understand the system pretty well, and really make an impact. Guys like Josh Williams, know, they've been around. They understand what's expected of them. They understand where the other players are going to be, and it worked out well. And it's really good to see. And a lot of seasons, especially in Major League Soccer, you do have so much kind of turnover. You have, you know, three or four players leaving, and three or four players coming in basically every position. I mean, you're just losing players like crazy. Berhalter seems to kind of shy away from that as much as possible. Tries to keep the team kind of as a unit, because this is a hard system to learn. It takes guys a long time. And I think it's good that he's kind of adopted that way of dealing with that. So, yeah, I think we've got a good kind of group of players, especially defensively. They're still going to be the occasional error. It's just part of the system. But when they're on their game, it can really kind of it can really shine. And I think that's what we saw in Seattle. And despite the result not going our way in terms of 3 points, I think there are a lot of positives to take away from the game.
When I first saw the lineup, it seemed to me that Greg, and I think we talked about the possibility of this last week, was sort of prioritizing the two Eastern Conference games at home that they've got on Wednesday and Saturday. You know, you take Jonathan Mensah out, who's arguably been the best defender, center back, that is. You know, you leave him at home, you leave Harrison Offal at home, you're not playing Artur at all. And I think, you know, I think it looked like, okay, you know, let's try and go get a result and see what we can do. Give these guys some minutes, but you know, we're gonna put focus on these other two games, at least defensively. But I was very impressed with what they were able to do, especially the back line. As Alex mentioned, they really did play as a unit. Even bringing Alex back in, a guy who hasn't been training with the team much until last week. You know, you saw the connectivity that this team developed last year. You know, it's all the same group of guys, you know, plus Milton in there. And they've obviously developed quite the chemistry over the last year or so. To be able to throw a guy back in there like that, like Alex did, was impressive. And you know, then to continue to push forward, you know, using the wingbacks, both Hector and Milton, I thought played well. Given, you know, we haven't seen the three in the back this year, and you know, they were able to adjust on the fly, especially a guy like Milton, who, you know, I'm sure they've worked on it some, but you know, hasn't had game experience with that, which can be tricky. You know, and I thought Ricardo Clark played a really good game. I know I mentioned to you, Bart, at halftime, mm-hmm. that I thought he was the best player on the field in the first half, and you could tell that he's, you know, at whether it's his age or just his lack of games so far this year, he's not, you know, fit enough to go a full 90 minutes. And that's why we saw Mohamed Abu come in. But, you know, I like what we got out of him, you know, from a crew perspective. I think that, you know, I don't think Artur's spot is in any sort of danger on a regular basis. But I do think that that's a guy who can push him a little bit. And, you know, you saw some of that on Saturday.
Yeah. And, you know, Murph, you make a great point about it. And I tweeted about this on Saturday, is that I think Ricardo Clark at the tender age of 35 years old is showing the youngins how it's done on the field. And I mean, it's really nice to think about it, gentlemen. How cool is this with the amount of depth that this Crew SC team bolsters? I mean, even if you look at it about 2 years ago, that, you know, you get one key injury and you don't know who's going to step in necessarily. You know, you look at what comes to mind with Michael Parker separating his shoulder and Tyson Wall had to stay in for a while, or Gaston Sorrow when he initially got injured, you know, who's going to play center back. I think even, you know, Rodrigo Saravia had to step in at center back a couple times. Just to know that we have kind of that next man up mentality here with Crew SC this season is really quite exciting.
At anywhere but striker.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I mean, we've almost moved that problem just up top, and it's been that way for two seasons. And I mean, we talk about this every week. I still want them to get some sort of another option up there. But yeah, in terms of the midfield and defensively, we've got a lot of players who are acclimated to the system that we have. And that's so important in any Major League Soccer team, but especially in ours.
Well, and I want to just do a quick shout out because, and we've, it's kind of like, reminiscent of the way we gushed about Zach Steffen week in and week out last season as a rookie. But again, Milton Valenzuela. I mean, his 1v1 defending is probably the tops on the team. At least, you know, in every situation, whenever it seems like there's some sort of breakdown and it's the last man back or anything, it seems like it's always Milton, and he's always able to get a clean tackle in. And to see him play, you know, 90 minutes, cover that entire touchline for, you know, the better part, lion's share of that game, and to still put in his performances defensively, and again have arguably one of the best offensive opportunities and create offensively. He has been fantastic, and the counter to that is as you look at that depth, and you know, what is it to remove him out of the lineup right now? Because you have to think with at least a couple of these games, with how young he is, and with this being, you know, two more games in the span of 8 days, that he's going to get some rest at some point over this upcoming stretch.
Yeah, I would imagine so. And I know we'll talk more about what we expect lineup wise, but you know, we've already seen Berhalter, you know, go to Hector on that left side. I believe it was the DC or the game right after DC, Montreal, maybe Vancouver, whatever it was. You know, we've seen that they're going to kind of handle Milton's minutes. You know, similarly, though, on a different end of your career than I assume they will with Pipa, which I think is fine. You know, kid is playing his first, you know, full professional season at 19 years old. You know, it's still hard to believe for a lot of people, I think, that he's 19 with the way he's playing, but I understand why they're doing that. But yeah, I agree with you, Bart. He's a guy that, you know, makes big tackles on the wings, shuts down players. And then, as you mentioned, sometimes he's the last man back. You know, being a smaller guy, when they go up for set pieces, it's going to be him and Harrison likely, you know, left back to defend. And sometimes they're going to have to be, you know, one-on-one, 2v1, you know, not in their favor type of thing. And, you know, he's already shown a couple times that he can make important tackles, which I think is big for this team. And something that the last few years when they've been, you know, we've seen them be hit on the counterattack, they probably could have used somebody like that, that is sure in their tackles.
One of the other, and we don't want to dwell too much on this game, but I'd also want to get your guys' thoughts a little bit more about the performance of Alex Crinale, a player that you mentioned, Patrick, that's been was training with the team all last week. He's got that loan deal with Orange County, Orange City, whatever, California. I figured that, you know, they were just going to have him around because it was, you've got these games in close succession and you're in the same hemisphere time zone as California is with that Seattle game. But he's continuing to remain with the team. How long do we think, what do we think, first of all, of his performance coming in there, subbing? And does he maybe, what does this say about Gaston Saros, you know, timeline perhaps? Do we think that Crinale is going to remain with the team a little bit longer here, or is this just going to be to get through this tough stretch of games?
I imagine that Crinale is going to remain with the team for some time. I've heard a couple good points, and thinking about it, you know, turf's not necessarily the best thing for the knees. So, you know,
probably
Gaston,
we didn't see Mike Grella in part.
Exactly. You know, so you get Gaston or Mike Grella necessarily on turf, it's probably not the best thing for somebody who's recovering from a devastating knee injury. But I think Crinale was fantastic. You know, his time down in the USL, he actually scored a goal. He came on as a late substitute for their striker. I think in stoppage time, he scored a goal that salvaged a point for him. And I just think he looks a little bit more confident in year two. He's, you know, standing at the back there with his best bud, Zach Steffen. And he's looking like a real big defensive stalwart for Crew SC. I wouldn't be surprised to see if he sticks around. But also, too, you know, not to play devil's advocate and directly contradict myself, I could see him going back out on loan just to get more minutes, but it seems like the game minutes are really paying off. And a couple interesting notes too, guys, is I was really paying attention to Orange County while he was on loan. They had him playing outside back on the right side, which I really would have liked to see in person. That had to be something, a sight to behold, truly.
I don't think he played outside back.
Did you see that? I played it, saw it on a lineup card for Orange County. He played right back, swear to God.
I think that was just listed wrong.
I will buy you Chipotle.
Talked to him about it today, I don't think he played right back. But
this has to be settled on Twitter publicly after the recording of this podcast. I demand to be tagged in it so I see, you know, what's what.
Same.
And then you will have Twitter and I need to see, or Chipotle, whoever has to buy Chipotle.
I think that Alex was very good, and it was surprising just how seamlessly he stepped back in to, you know, whatever the situation was with his teammates. You know, he was talking today about how he, you know, didn't expect to go in, you know, obviously that early, but even after the red card, it didn't sound like initially that was going to be his time to go in. It looked like they were going to keep rolling with what they had out there. And then all of a sudden Greg was like, Alex, go warm up. And so he kind of had to get his head into it and whatnot. And, you know, that's impressive. It's, you know, obviously he played well at points last year. But for a young player to get thrown into something like that, you know, like we talked about some of the other guys, impressive on his part. As for what his future holds, I think it does depend on what they think of Gaston. You know, if they're confident that he's going to be back soon and, you know, maybe he plays in this stretch or something, then, you know, I think Alex probably is the odd man out for whatever reason and he goes back on loan. But, you know, if they're, you know, a little unsure of Gaston, if we don't see him during the stretch and Alex is able to perform well, maybe he remains the team. But right now, I think it's just kind of a numbers game and wanting to make sure he gets minutes.
And I think it's important that he gets those minutes. I mean, he's obviously a player with a tremendous amount of talent. He's young. He needs to play. He's obviously got the system down, but, you know, he's going to have to get, you know, actual game time. So I hope that they loan him out if he's not going to get that game time. You know, I would hate to have him just kind of sit on the bench and, you know, not get to see anything, you know, which we've seen in the past in some cases, not during Berhalter's time, but pre-Berhalter, you know, you'd have these young guys and they just, you know, they would just kind of, you know, languish as the third or fourth string of whatever their position is. And then they would, you know, those are critical years of player development. So, you know, I hope that they'll make a determination as to whether or not they think he's going to be a regular player. If he's only going to play, you know, here and there, then loan him out. You can, you know, he's one flight away from Columbus. You can, you know, throw him in there. It's clear you can throw him in there on just a couple of days' notice, and he'll, you know, get in touch with these guys and, you know, be fine. So I hope they do what they need to do. You know, get him the minutes he needs. Send him back out to Orange County if he's not going to play. Let him continue to develop into a player who can help us in the future. I'm sure he can help us in the future. And, you know, his time will come. It may not be this season, but I think he's, you know, if not a starter next season, the season after that, for sure, he's right there.
Guys, can I go to Orange County on loan and cover Alex?
Yeah, you just have to pay for your flight and lodging. Maybe Alex will let you stay with him. One thing I think we should point out is that technically the loan was a season-long loan with the option to return. So it'll be interesting to see how that gets handled if they decide they want to keep him. I'm sure there's some sort of out clause, but it was technically a season-long loan, which is different than some of the other ones they've done. They've done game-to-game type of things.
Well, I thought it was, but with like a kind of game-to-game thing, like couldn't they just say, well, we just want to keep grabbing him each game if they really... I mean, look, this is... We're dealing with Anthony Precourt. I don't think he's not going to just try to take the most ridiculous interpretation of a contract to go in his favor, even if that's it. But it was certainly... And for what it's worth, one way that you might be able to... Ralph, you said that he had scored... maybe as a possible super sub at Strikers.
First appearance against Phoenix Rising, I believe.
Against the DDA Drogbas. So he scored against Drogba. No, but I mean, maybe I believe Alex was a striker back in the day. Now that back in the day was probably, you know, in high school or prior to that, as most center backs are. But yeah. He could be an option there if Adam John's still not getting the job done. I say that in jest on the most part. I'll do.
I'm not joking. I'd give him a shot.
Screw I would it. Too.
He's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, play it. He's a more athletic version of Adam Bedell.
Although yeah. Bedell still probably had about like 6 inches on him. That guy was enormous.
Probably still is.
Yeah.
Probably has a better touch. He probably has a better touch too than Bedell, because I watched Bedell head a ball 1 inch off the ground against, who'd we have? Crystal Palace, that friendly in 2015, was it? I can't remember that one.
Lord, yeah. Well, do you remember Alex's header against Cincinnati last year? That wasn't the prettiest thing ever.
What game against Cincinnati? I don't remember anything happening there.
I saw you there, so.
Oh, yeah, I wasn't sitting two seats down for you. Never mind.
Speaking of points in Columbus Crew history that we'd all like to forget, today is the infamous anniversary, 2 years of the Montreal game, PK Gate, I don't know what we're going to call it, but the final game in a Columbus Crew jersey for one Kai Kamara, that 4-4 draw that there was a little bit of a row. I don't know if anybody, if either of our, you know, kind of crew historians want to walk through exactly the breakdown the lead up to that infamous penalty argument between Kai and Frederico Higuain, and you know, what kind of went on from there.
I could take you through my personal account and opinions, but outside of that, no.
Whoever would like to.
The Crew were off to a rough start to 2016 following the disappointment of losing MLS Cup the previous year. The atmosphere, I would imagine, inside the locker room probably wasn't at its highest, and Kai's been known to not enjoy those moments, so to speak. And I think that despite him starting off well, I think he had 5 goals at that point. Going into that game, he had 3 goals. Scores 2 goals in that match. Pipa scores a goal. They're up 3-1 right after halftime. I think it was like the 53rd-ish minute.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, Justin gets taken down in the box. Or a penalty kick's called. There was some debate about whether or not Justin dove there. And then, you know, there's penalty kick. Greg said after the game, and Kai kind of followed this up, that, you know, he designated both Pipa and Kai as penalty kick takers and kind of left it up to them to sort out. And Kai, obviously, on a hat trick, wanted to take the penalty kick. It would have been his first career hat trick. And, you know, madness ensues. Kai and Pipa are visibly arguing on the field. I guess Pipa wanted to give the shot to Ethan, because Ethan had been in quite the slump to start the year. And Ethan said no. So Kai assumed he should take it. Well, people didn't want Kai to take it. And, you know, I was rewatching the goal today, and, you know, Pipa obviously scores, runs over to the Nordeca, a good collection of the team celebrates with him. And Kai was certainly not one of them. And then throughout the rest of the match, you could tell Kai was not happy, was a little pouting, as Kai's been known to do. And like you said, Bart, that was the last we saw of Kai. And obviously that game, up 4-1, somewhere around the 55th minute, and Crew end up tying that game 4-4, and kind of the bad start to the season just spirals from there. And it was obviously not the finest day in Crew history. You know, you don't, even if players don't get along, you don't want to see that spill over onto the field, especially as publicly as that was. You know, you've seen guys yell at each other before on the field, but usually it's in the heat of the contest more so than these two guys just genuinely not liking each other. And Kai obviously made it clear after the game with comments about Higuain being selfish and almost blaming him for losing the golden boot because he didn't get to take penalty kicks the year prior. You know, it just got ugly. And yeah. And, you know, then both players were fined. And Greg made the choice to part ways with Kai, sending him to New England right at the trade deadline. And, you know, I know there are some people out there that believe that the Crew would have been better off to keep Ola because of his goal scoring ability and move on from an older Higuain. I am not one of those. I would be happy to hear your guys' thoughts on that topic.
My thoughts have not changed from the moment that decision happened. Basically, as soon as I saw them argue, as soon as I saw the post game comments from Kai Kamara, I think we talked about that night in Hendox, if I recall, the day after. And it was, yeah, I mean, there was no choice at that point. I mean, you just do not, the argument is so much secondary to the fact that he went publicly out and bashed his teammate, blamed his teammate for a laundry list of grievances that were either team problems or problems for Kai himself. And that's just not the kind of player that you want in your club. I mean, that might be okay if you're an LA Galaxy and the player is some sort of European superstar. I mean, then maybe you make an exception there and you say, hey, it's okay that this guy's a jerk. He's incredible.
Are you referring to anyone in particular?
I'm not. That was not an Ibrahimovic reference. I was just saying, like, if you are an incredible talent, maybe you overlook kind of personal flaws that are, you know, detrimental to the locker room. Kai is not that. He was not that. He's a very good Major League Soccer striker, but he tore that locker room in half. And Federico Higuain kept it all behind closed doors. You know, whatever you want to say about Pipa, he didn't bash Kai back. He just kind of took it and then said, well, you know, I don't want to comment publicly. And
yeah, he really wouldn't talk about it.
And that's the way that a professional adult deals with their problem, not a, you know, a petulant man child who is very good at scoring soccer goals. So I am super glad that we got rid of Kai Kamara. I'm really sad that it happened in the first place, but once it happened, he was gone. He had to go. Just for the culture of the team, the culture for, you know, Berhalter, you know, you can't let things like that slide. Otherwise, you know, other players start thinking that they can get away with it too, and the whole thing kind of spirals from there. And when you look at things, I mean, Federico Higuain is arguably one of the most influential players in Crew history. I don't think that if Kai had two extra years, people would be making the same comments. He would have scored goals. He would have done, you know, dumb celebrations. He would have done a bunch of dumb social media posts. He would have complained about, you know, this or that, you know, somewhat frequently. He was just never, I don't know, he never seemed like he fit with our culture anyway. I mean, he had a big ego. This team is all about not having egos. So I don't know. I'm no regrets with that whole thing. I'm almost glad it happened to a certain degree. But
well, the and then Ola, thing is that with
Ola scored that hat trick right afterward too, which was amazing.
Oh yeah. Well, the one aspect too with it is it's one thing almost where I think if you're Berhalter, you could almost forgive Kai, or at least, you know, give him some leeway for the comments immediately after the game. It's sort of the heat of the moment. These are professional athletes, and you're getting a microphone shoved in your face. You're not always going to say. The fact that he doubled down a couple days later after getting the, like, suspension or whatever it was, you know, Greg saying he was going to review it, that, I think, that was the most damning, and that's where, because I was at that point, it's like, look, I want my striker. All most strikers are divas. I want my striker to want to get a hat trick and want to score goals. If your striker doesn't, that's a problem. And even, you know, again, this stuff immediately after the game. But when you've got time to think about it and still come back and say, yep, you know what? That's what I'm going to go with. That's for me when it was, okay, well, then he's gone. And you look at his, you know, resume. Before that and after that, all the teams, you know, just one and a half seasons with, and it makes more sense.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a really sad situation in a lot of ways, because I liked Kai as a player. I thought some of his kind of social media antics were a little much sometimes, and some of the comments that he would make about himself and his own career were a little much sometimes. I've never liked players who kind of toot their own horn all the time. Unless they can back it up. And Kai didn't always back it up. I've always kind of preferred the quiet players like Higuain. You know, even when Higuain, you know, is breaking records in Columbus, he says, oh, you know, I'm so thankful to have all these teammates who have helped me achieve this or that, you know, blah, blah, blah. You know, that's the kind of culture that we've built here through Greg Berhalter. This idea that, you know, the system is the most important thing. The system is what matters. The people involved in that system are kind of secondary to that. That was completely the opposite kind of way Kai Kamara handled himself. And yeah, I could have forgiven the fight. I could have forgiven the initial post-match comments. But the fact that that next morning they asked, you know, he was at Obetz and, you know, you had a dozen reporters there saying, hey, you know, basically just putting it right on a tee for him, saying, hey, do you want to walk this back a little bit? And he said, absolutely not. I stand by everything I said, blah, blah, blah. You got to go. Sorry. You got to go. And you know, we'll send you to whoever's going to pay the most money. You're not going to get the pick. Sorry. And look at what he's achieved since then. He hasn't achieved anything. So, you know, he's a flawed person in some ways. I feel like, you know, maybe not the best team player. And in a team sport like this, that can be problematic. So kind of a sad situation. But, hey, it happened, and we moved on. And I think we're almost better for it. So
the thing I remember most about it is that was one of the rare games that I was out of town. And trying to sneak watch it during a wedding. And I see that, you know, it was 4-0. Everything's going great. I'm like, wow, I got to go check this out. So I go back to my room and watch the last couple minutes of it. And I get to that 54th minute or so or 4-1. Thank you. But, you know, I get back to the 54th minute and kind of sit back and get to that penalty kick. And I sit there and I go, oh, man, what's going on? And like you guys alluded to with the post-game comments, kind of with my role shifting with Crew SC now, knowing Alex Steck to the level that I know Alex Steck now, I can't imagine being a reporter and going up and asking Kai that, and to have him, you know, quote, you know, he say, we score a lot of goals. I don't need Higuain. I don't depend on him at all or anything like that. To hear the venom in his voice and to hear how much disdain he had with, Higuain and everything. I can't imagine being the reporter that has to go up to him and stick a microphone in his face and get his opinions on that. But the fact that he said that, I remember the expression on my face, just my mouth just dropped and went, oh my God, he's not going to be on the team much longer with that, because Berhalter's not going to take that crap and sit there and go, you know, I couldn't believe what was happening. That not only was the season not off to the greatest of starts, but that moment really kind of set the tone of 2016 for me, that things were kind of imploding. And I think we knew the reason why. It wasn't everybody else there, but it was this negative attitude that was up there at the center forward position. And luckily, like you guys said too, I think Ola Kamara was probably one of the nicer hidden secrets, one of the best kept secrets in Major League Soccer at the time. And obviously we got things together in 2017, and, you know, we moved on and we're a better team. And, you know, Kai's on his 8th different team now and living in a different country. So, you know, I think Crew SC really, really came out the better end of that deal, at least.
Just to edit Ralph real quick, Steck wasn't there for that post-game comments, and Kai's only on his 2nd team. But I do think it's interesting to point out that it could be very different if the Crew don't give up that lead. You know, if you're able to win that game, or, you know, don't implode the way that you did, 2 goals, you know, really quickly, and then giving up a stoppage time goal. I think it was the last kick of the game. You know, does the situation maybe get handled a little differently with people a little bit more, you know, a little happier because you came out with a win instead of giving up a 3-goal or a 2-goal lead and whatnot, which 3-goal lead, I guess, at that point, you know, just kind of something interesting to think about.
It certainly is. And, you know, there'll be time to really look back and review that moment in team's history after we save the Crew. There's been a little bit of some developments over the past week. There were some podcasts. There's a handful of, I know there's a post recently by Off Field of Schemes, that blog from the accompanying author, Neil DeMouse, about some of the potential things moving forward with the stadium site search in Austin. The city of Austin is now hosting a series of community forums or hearings to try to gauge what people are, what residents, what their interest might be in McCalla Place as a potential site. I've seen a handful of unverified things on Twitter that, you know, Anthony Precourt could be setting a June date as the, you know, Austin, this is time to, you know, give me your free land or I've got to do something. Alex Stanek, why don't you keep us or update us on the latest efforts here and developments in this chance to save the Crew?
Yeah, I think overall it's been a little bit of a slow week. There's still been, you know, a lot of things going on behind the scenes. There have been some kind of legal procedures going on, but for the most part, everybody's kind of waiting for some major developments. I think that, you know, there's a possibility that maybe we'll have some more to talk about before too long. But yeah, I mean, this whole legal thing is just kind of working its way through the courts. From the analysis that I've seen from kind of people who are actual lawyers and not, you know, not amateur lawyers like me, you know, it seems like it's looking like it's not going to get tossed out and that we're going to go to discovery, which is, of course, the thing that Major League Soccer does not want. They do not want to turn over their, you know, Soccer United marketing agreement. They do not want to turn over the supposed Austin clause, if that clause even exists at all. They don't want to open their books or anything like that. So this is where it starts to get really interesting. You know, we still have that confirmation of the meetings that have taken place between Major League Soccer and potential investors here in Columbus. That's kind of an encouraging sign. And I think that there will be more encouraging news to come. But kind of a slow week. There were some Twitter hints that, you know, maybe something was happening today. It was a little hard to read those. I've heard bits and pieces of certain things, but yeah, I mean, I think there'll be good news before too long, I hope. This is still going to be kind of a process. So hopefully we can continue to kind of make some gains, and hopefully before too long we'll have saved the Crew.
It's certainly been interesting to kind of, yeah, watch these legal proceedings. I do. I'm kind of in agreement with you. I think discovery, once the judge does rule, and again, I think we've all discussed it, that, you know, when your argument as the plaintiff's there that you shouldn't be subject to discovery because none of this applies to you because you've got such an arcane ownership structure, that, well, then the judge is always going to say, well, I'd like to learn a little bit more about that ownership structure. Why don't you let us know? I know, you know, one of the other interesting things is what can, because, you know, anything, if it's emails back and forth with other owners to, you know, gauge their what their thoughts are on, you know, Anthony Precourt's move to try to, you know, build consensus in support of it, in support of this exploration or anything that, you know, might be related to that. And you think about what can come out from that, you know, might not even be directly related. Obviously, none of this is really going to be publicly aired, but for all the parties of this lawsuit, all the other owners, if you've got maybe an email where you don't say the nicest thing about one of the other guys, and that happens to be in that thread, we saw the way they communicate when the emails were leaked with Mark Abbott and Dave Greeley, how candid these conversations are about significant things, even when it's obviously those were spoofed, the spoofed email for Mark Abbott, but how Dave Greeley responded to that suggests that, you know, there's a certain level of candor between MLS executives and leaderships and, you know, the president of a MLS club that I said president with air quotes there in regards to Dave Greeley. So I think there's, yeah, again, a lot of momentum behind I obviously understand why PSV, MLS are fighting this, trying to get it dismissed. But I think when it doesn't, and it's not going to be dismissed, I don't think that means that, you know, the Art Modell lawsuit will be upheld necessarily, if it's ruled on at all. I think it just comes down to once you have to fight up to that threshold. And then once it gets there, I think owners, again, are going to say, this isn't going to be worth it. Yes, we might be able to beat this so we can all move a team, move our teams whenever we want. But there's a 50-50 chance with the lawsuit. There's a 100% chance that you're not going to get, you know, Art Modell laws in every other state if you settle before any of it gets that far. And that's what I think they got to do, and what they'll do once the judge says, yep, we're going to have discovery because we want to learn a little bit more about this. Then they've got that incentive, and they need to start considering whether a settlement's going to be in the best interest of keeping this little Ponzi scheme they've got going.
Yeah, and I also think, I mean, when you're talking about ownership and you're talking about a fair valuation and, you know, all these things that, you know, they really need to learn about. I mean, they need to learn what is the value of the crew. That's something that's not easily, you know, calculated unless you understand all the aspects of what comes with MLS ownership. One of those aspects is this, you know, deal of owning a segment of Soccer United marketing. And that is possibly the most closely guarded secret in American sports. They do not want to show that agreement to anyone, let alone someone who is angry at them and who could, you know, put the document on a USB, you know, drive and, oops, I accidentally left this, you know, when I was giving this interview to the Dispatch. Oh, mm-hmm. I accidentally left it in, you know, Adam Jardy's, you know, desk drawer. Oops, so sorry. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, that has got to be kind of in their mind is like, oh, man, we cannot let this get out. And I think as soon as the judge rules, there's going to be an agreement that will, you know, happen before they have to, you know, hand over any documents at all. I think that things will move pretty quick at that point, because then they're going to be, you know, really on the hot seat. And I don't know how it'll all play out with Austin. I still think, and I said this months ago, I still think you could see a situation where Anthony Precourt basically sells the crew to Major League Soccer, who then sell the crew to, you know, owners in Columbus. And then you also have, you know, Anthony Precourt being granted an expansion immediately in Austin, that he could either expand in Austin or he can sell that to, you know, a Sacramento or a Cincinnati or whoever. That's a possibility. Because then you don't have to worry about him kind of flipping out at Major League Soccer. He gets his money. He can still get his team in Austin if he wants. He just doesn't get Greg Berhalter. He doesn't get Federico Higuain. He doesn't get Will Trapp. He doesn't get, you know, the crew logo. He doesn't get Mafre Stadium. And at this point, honestly, he might just be like, that's fine. I hate this situation. It's got to be miserable for him, too, because he's looking like an idiot. His whole team is looking really dumb. You know, they're holding information meetings in Austin in the hallways of public buildings because they, you know, forgot to rent an actual room. And, you know, they have these like really crappy PowerPoint presentations. Yep. And, you know,
Richard Suttle's out there, yeah, saying, I don't know how this works. You're, yeah, the lobbyist.
Yeah. And he's got like notes on pieces of paper that he's holding because he hasn't memorized what he was going to say. And
it just, yeah, sounds like something from Arrested Development.
Yeah. Oh, how are you going to get people into the stadium? Well, we haven't figured that out yet, but we will get back to you with information on that soon. And all of this stuff, it's so absurd. And that kind of absurdity mixed with the legal situation here in Ohio, which honestly, I mean, that law might be constitutional at this point. They made a really good point in that opening remark in that the city filed, where they said, mm-hmm, no one forces you to take public money. So it's a contract. It's not a kind of state versus state thing where you're trying to be, yep, protectionist. You agreed to this when you took the money. You agreed to all of the laws in the state, mm-hmm, of Ohio that come with that money when you took the money. And if your lawyers
didn't necessarily take the money, but it has been taken. The team, yeah, took the money.
Yeah.
You inherited that.
Yes. And if your lawyers didn't know about that and they didn't kind of do that, that's on you, bud. Mm-hmm. That's the law. You know, if you break the law in downtown Columbus and it's a law you've never heard of, tough. You broke the law, dude. So
I would point out that rich white guys do have a way of getting out of those more than maybe most people.
That is absolutely true. But this whole thing is going to be very interesting. I believe we may be getting some news some point during this week. By the time you listen to this podcast, there might even be news out that we're not going to be able to talk about yet. But this is going to be a process, and things continue to kind of move in a direction that is favorable for Columbus, but a long way still to go, but things are looking up. So save the crew, baby.
Certainly things are looking up on that. And we want to be wrapping up here kind of quickly because this is recorded on Monday night. And there's another significant development, the Cleveland Cavaliers hopefully sweeping the Toronto Raptors. So let's get back to previewing the upcoming game. We'll just probably lead off with the one game Wednesday. And then because we've obviously got the Saturday game as well, but we've got a couple teams coming up this week, both of them down toward the bottom of the standings in the Eastern Conference, with Philadelphia coming up on Wednesday. A team, though, that Columbus did not score against in Philly, a scoreless draw, and this is going to be a Columbus team that is going to have a rotation lineup once again. Pat, Ralph, what are we thinking about that matchup on Wednesday?
I'll be interested to see how they line up. Obviously, you know, they rested Jonathan, they rested Harrison, they rested Artur, so you've got kind of, you know, Artur's a little more offensive, but still kind of your defensive guys ready to go. But, you know, do you play Federico Higuain in this game, you know, coming off of a short week with travel from across the country? You know, Giassi Zardes is I imagine he can play, you know, these three games, but, you know, you never know what he's dealing with. You know, and if you don't play Federico Higuain, do you go to Eduardo Sosa, who we're yet to see this year? Do you, you know, without Pedro Santos, obviously, you have to, you know, account for another winger. Maybe if you have Santos, you think about playing him in the middle. You know, I'm not sure if Mike Grella's ready to come in and start yet. I don't know if he could go, you know, more than 45 minutes, even if that. So I'll be very interested to see. I do think that, you know, this is a Philly team that they should be able to score on. You know, from what I've seen of Philly, it's, you know, I think this is a team still very much trying to find itself. A very young back line. They've played all right, but young and inexperienced. Obviously, they shut Columbus out in the 0-0 tie earlier this season, but that was in Philly. So, yeah, I'll be very interested to see how the attacking pieces are placed out there and, you know, what that kind of looks like in terms of you know, generating offensive chances.
The thing I'm concerned about, well, not concerned about necessarily, but Philadelphia has only amassed 4 points since their last meeting with Crew SC on March 17th, or was it the 31st? Can't remember. Anyway, since their meeting in March, the Union only have 4 points, and the defense kind of doesn't look too terribly exciting. They lose their marker pretty frequently. They're not really the best at set pieces to defend necessarily. But it could be an interesting matchup, I think, on a Wednesday game. I don't know. Maybe a little home cooking coming back after a hard-fought point on the road could do Crew SC a little bit of good heading into the weekend.
How many points, I think, Patrick, you kind of alluded to it, and we'll, I guess, maybe use this in lieu of maybe predicting score lines for the game because we won't have you know, a big preview for the Saturday one. How many points do we think that Crew are going to come out of these two games with? Patrick Murphy, we'll go with you first.
Oh, that's a good question. I think given that you had a positive result on Saturday, you come into this game feeling fairly good about yourself, even though, you know, you had a red card, you're going to be without Pedro, you're rotating guys, players are going to be tired. So, you know, I think they get the win on Wednesday. I also think, you know, Chicago just doesn't scare me. And obviously they beat Columbus in Chicago, but, you know, I think there's a really good chance here to come out of this with, you know, 7 total points from the week, which would be a really good week, all things considered. But yeah, I'll go with that. I think they managed to get max points the rest of the week.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Mark.
No, Malcolm. No, heading it back to you for your picks.
Yeah, I mean, that's not, you know, like Pat said, I fully didn't anticipate Crew to tie, at least in Seattle, especially going down a man in the 15th minute and with the possession figures looking the way that they did for Seattle. But, you know, Philly, like I said, the defense doesn't scare me. The one main guy that scares me on Philly is David Akam. Anytime you get that guy in the space, it's tough, you know, and I don't think, you know, Milton or Harrison, depending on who plays, whatever side he's going down, I guess he's on the left side, so that would match him up with Harrison. You know, a stride-for-stride battle with David Akam, that's not one that I'm looking to get into too much during the game. But the defense is tough. They're number 10. I can't think of his last name off the top of my head. I think it's like Dorshak or something like that. He's a big signing that they got from overseas this year. It's pretty good. Pretty good on the ball. Decent shot. I'd anticipate the Trap and Artur are going to be commissioned with closing down on him. But like Pat said, I think 7 points is not out of the realm of possibility this week. And especially with teams at the top of the East, like Orlando winning 6 in a row, you're going to take every point that you can get right about now.
All right. Alex, how many points are the Crew going to walk away with this weekend? Or by the end of this weekend, I guess.
Oh, my gosh.
It's like he didn't know the question was coming.
I'm going to say 4. I think we get the win on Wednesday and we draw this weekend. But, you know, even if we get 2 draws, you know, I'm not super mad about that. These kind of quick turnaround games early on in the season are always difficult. Crew always starts slow. I think that I've seen enough from them so far this year that I'm feeling pretty decent about where we're going to end up at the end of the year. So, you know, I think some of these games are a little bit not as important as later on in the year. But yeah, I'm going with 4 points. I think we'll get it done against Philly.
I think it's interesting to note that for whatever reason, and, you know, Greg talked about it today and even last week a little, that this team really struggles in the middle game of these 3 and 8 day stretches. And, you know, they've tried different things. They've tried different training methods. You know, now they're trying something to get the guys into the normal training week so that that Wednesday game is almost as if it's a training. But, you know, for whatever one reason or another, that seems to be an issue for them is that middle game. Now, you know, you're coming home and that obviously helps. But, you know, it is tough to get that game for some reason for this team.
It will be, I think, though, for what it's worth, that the Crew will get it and both the games. So coming away with all 6 points. And I think it's necessary in part. I know we're talking about how, you know, it's still early on in the season, but a lot of these teams, pretty much everyone that isn't New York City or SKC or Vancouver has games in hand on Columbus. And you can pretty much bet that Columbus is going to have the most games played by the end of the weekend when they add 2 more to have 12 games played. I mean, you've got teams like Toronto and DC United just 7 games so far played this season, along with Seattle. Part of that has to do, you know, with CONCACAF games. Regardless, I think Crew takes care of business. They have to. They get all 6 points in both these games. I'm going to go with a 2-1 win Wednesday and a solid 3-1 win over Chicago on Saturday to push themselves up the standings. That would, I believe, get them into, they'd still trail Atlanta. And that's, again, what says a lot about Atlanta. 22 points, wow, just 9 games played. Anyway,
a lot of goals
parting,
too.
Yeah. Any parting thoughts, squad, before we wrap this guy up?
I've got a couple of announcements. If you guys are into the beautiful game, which I'm assuming you are if you're listening to this podcast, 3 big events happening this weekend. Columbus Futsal's in action this weekend against Toronto. Yeah, Toronto at 3 p.m. at Upper Arlington High School, the Fightin' Pat Murphys, where you can play the Fightin' Pat Murphys.
Here.
And then a cool thing going on here for the Columbus Eagles. So their game's at 2 o'clock at Otterbein University. You can go to the Eagles game. The Eagles are actually getting 2 buses down to Mafre. So if you all you need is a ticket to the Crew game, it doesn't cost you any money to get on the buses at all or anything like that. You park at Otterbein, hop on the bus, go to the crew game, go tailgate, do your thing, go to the crew game, go up the lads, get back on the bus, go get your car at Otterbein. You bypass the parking and all that stuff, and all you need is just a ticket to the crew game. So, cool little thing there to kind of get the Columbus soccer community together. Like I said, the Eagles play at 2, and then I believe the Saturday game is at 7:30 against Chicago. So, something to look forward to. Treat your mom on this Mother's Day weekend. And, oh, by the way, everybody, take your mothers out. If your mother's still with you, take your mothers out to a nice breakfast, brunch, dinner. Do something nice for mom this weekend.
Absolutely. Do something nice for mom. If anyone else, Murph, Alex, any other parting thoughts?
I'm good.
All right.
I have nothing to plug.
Well, gentlemen, it's a pleasure as always. All you moms out there listening, happy Mother's Day, and we will catch you next week. Until then, bye, buddies.